Today is the, I think today is the 10th of April, 2018, Tuesday class. So we will now compose our mind, develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja and chanting.南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无本师释迦牟尼佛，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无观世音菩萨，南无阿弥陀佛，南无阿弥陀佛，南无阿弥陀佛，南无弥勒佛。南无弥勒佛，南无弥勒佛，南无普贤菩萨，南无普贤菩萨，南无普贤菩萨，南无佛菩萨，南无佛菩萨，南无佛菩萨，阿拉汉萨玛萨布多巴嘎瓦。Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Sakkasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, you all can be seated. Then we will turn to page 1 of the chanting book. We will commence with the Vandana. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we are chant the padipa puja, offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena tipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonudang. Ganna sambarayutena โดเพนะหังสุกังหินะปูจาเยปูจานิยังทังปูจาเบจานะมุตตมังวันนะกันดะโกโนเปทังเอตังกสุมาสันทตินปูจายามิโมนินดาสสิริปาดาสาโรโรเหปูเจมิบุตังกสุเมนาเนนาปุณเณนามเทนาเชโหทุโมคังปูพังมิลายาทิยาตาอิดังเมขาโยตถายติวินาสบาวังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเตปานิยังปริคาภิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาทุมุตเถมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเตปาเลปริคาภิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาทายะปาติกันหาทุมุตตมังอาดิวาเสทุโนบันเตโบจานังปริคาภิทังอนุคัมปังอุปาทายะปาติกันหาทุมุตตมังนาวยชันเดปูจาaspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light to the Buddha. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water.May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One,who is perfect in wisdom and virtues. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soonest possible. Significance of offering of flowers.May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana, making of overall aspiration.By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Then sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception.Especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then you all can offer the garland that just came in just now. Where is Polian? She brought the garland in. Okay.Then after they offer, we can rejoice. Okay. You can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. 萨丢萨丢萨丢萨丢萨丢萨丢 OK, very good.、Yeah. So, we have completed the offering.、Yeah. So, tonight we can have half an hour of meditation.、Yeah. We are off the light.Oh, say like that. Ah, okay, yeah. I understand there is somebody new. Eh? yeah. Okay, I'll give some instruction. Eh? Yeah. Okay. For those who already know how to meditate, eh, you can maybe just proceed with your meditation. Eh? Yeah. Then, for one or two of you who are new, I will give you some instruction. Eh?Just relax body and mind. Yeah? Feel yourself completely relaxed. Yeah? You can sit on the floor mat or the cushion. You try to sit. Mm. Then make sure you have a stable posture. Yeah? The posture must be stable to enable you to silence your mind to develop the meditation.Then you straighten your backbone. Eh? Make sure your backbone is fairly straight. Eh? No need to be very stiff. Relax but straight. Eh? Yeah. Then close your eye. Mm. Close your eye. I will teach you a simple, skillful means. We call it the Mind Spring Method. Combined with loving kindness or metta.You just have to listen attentively to the instruction and just follow whatever you can. Eh? Because all these instructions, you can read them up in my transcript book, which we already have developed over the years. Eh? So you can go back and read about it to develop the understanding. But now you just listen attentively, then just try your very best to do. Eh? This is to...decondition your heedless thinking to make you calm, to make you peaceful, so that you can start your meditation. Mm. Okay, close your eye, straighten your backbone, relax body and mind, feel yourself completely relaxed. Mm. Then maintain attention or mindfulness or awareness at your forehead. Just feel, huh? Don't think, feel. You can detect any tension.Any tightness or any stress within, you just feel it soothingly, relax, relax, and relax. Relax every part of your forehead muscle. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you sweep your mind down to your eye muscle, do the same, feel and relax into it. Whatever tension, tightness, or stress within, you just feel it soothingly, relax, relax, and relax.Then you sweep it down further to your facial muscle. Feel and relax them. Each and every strand of your facial muscle. Feel them soothingly relax. Relax them all. Mm. Then to assist you further to relax, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile to yourself, you are relaxed.That radiant smile will cause your facial muscle to relax because the moment you smile, you have joy, you are happy. Mm. Then after that, you can radiate loving kindness to yourself. This will help to develop the positive energy, yeah, or the good positive vibration. We call it the loving kindness energy or vibration. So you can reciteFollowing what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, you must feel your entire body and mind, your entire being, each and every cell of it. Be well and happy, well and happy. May it too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May it too be free from all harm and danger. May your mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within your hearts. Then you can extend this same loving kindness to your loved ones. May all my loved ones, including my parents, my brothers, my sister, my good friends, my relative, and all those that have close affinity with you, may they all do be well and happy, well and happy. You can radiate all this metta to them. You can visualize their face and will it to them. Read it. You can repeat. May my loved ones all too be well and happy, well and happy. Free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then may all beings within this vicinity, known and unknown, seen and unseen, including all Kayanamitas or Dharma friends who are with us here, may they all too be well and happy, well and happy. May they do be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May their mind states too be free from all harm and danger. Then may their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we extend this loving kindness to all beings. May all beings within the whole of Patalingjaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, Mother Earth, and all of the beings within our solar system, our galaxy, our Milky Way, and all beings within the entire universe of ours. May they all to be well and happy, well and happy. May their mind states to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. Free from all harm and danger. May their mind states to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. And may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then you come back to your facial muscle. Just feel, then relax. Move it down to your neck, feel, relax. Then move it down to your shoulder, feel, relax. Then your hand, feel, relax. Back to shoulder, feel, relax. Then you sweep it down to your heart area, feel. Just feel, silence everything and just feel. You can detect whatever vibration or heartbeat. You just silent your mind and just stay there for as long as you can. If you are new, you are still not trained, not sensitive, then you just feel. Just like you feel your forehead, you feel your heart area. You feel and just silent your mind and relax into it. Feel it soothingly relax each and every part of your heart area. Relax, relax and relax. Then you move your attention down to your stomach. Feel, relax. Abdomen, feel, relax. Then you move it down to your leg. Feel, relax. Buttock, feel, relax. Then you reverse the whole of the mind sweeping method. From your buttock, feel, relax. Your leg, feel, relax. Then you move your attention up to your abdomen, silent, feel, relax. Then your stomach, feel, relax. Then your heart area, silent everything, feel, and just relax. Then move it up to your shoulder, hand back to shoulder, just feel and relax. Then your neck, feel, relax. Then sweep it out to your facial muscle, feel, relax. Eye muscle, feel, relax. Then your forehead, feel, relax. But now you should be more calm, more peaceful. Then you have to stabilize this mind that is peaceful and calm. So I will teach you another technique which we call anapanasati, or mindfulness of the in and out breath. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So anapanasati is actually training your mind to be mindful of your in and out breath. So like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing in front of your nostril, you just feel. Then when you can detect your breathing, you just follow the instruction. Breathing in, the mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. Means when the breath goes in, your mind follows in perfect harmony and synchrony. Then when the breath comes out, the mind again follow. So the breath and the mind move as one. That is anapanasati. So you just train. Initially, if you are not used to it, split second your mind will wander off. Never mind. When it wanders off, don't react, don't become unhappy. Just understand that the untrained mind think a lot, is heedless, wanders off very fast, cannot be mindful. So every time you wander off, you bring the attention back to your nostril. Again, you feel your breathing, then try again. Every time you wander off, you return to your breath, then maintain mindfulness or awareness, repeat the training. So if you are patient, not long, within minutes, you should be able to stabilize this anapanasati. Then when anapanasati stabilizes, you will experience a type of peace which we call piti, calmness of mind, or spiritual peacefulness. Then sometimes you can experience a type of joy, they call it spiritual joy or spiritual rapture. It like rapture within your mind, you feel very good. So you continue that training. And for those who already know how to meditate, once your anapanasati develop, you continue to silence your mind and relax into it. Then allow it to meditate, to develop the understanding. Okay, I will let you do your training. Then when the alarm goes off, which is 30 minutes, I will ring the bell 3 times. Then when you hear the bell, you can slowly, mindfully come out of the meditation. others still wants to meditate, you can continue for yourself and now. Slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. I think Alicia's friend is new. She is there. She knows it. You can understand English? Ah, good. Sadhu. After that, I'll give you some books. Don't worry. You just relax yourself. Just make yourself at ease. Just feel relaxed. And welcome to join us. No need to feel ashamed or what. All of them have been here before like you. They were once new. So you just make yourself as part of this Kainamitta group. Kainamitta means Dhamma friends. All of Dhamma friends who walk the path of Dhamma, we call them Kainamittas. So in short, it's called Dhamma friends. Okay. Now we turn to page 6. We are doing the invocation for the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in the entirety, let the devas or deities come here. Let them hear the good teaching of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta chakawalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammang muni rajasa sunantu sakamokkadang Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuto veja charana sampano sugato lokavidu apnutaro purisa dhamma sarati Sata deva manosanang buddho bhagavati. Swakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko akaliko ehipaseko opanayiko Ajatang veditapo vinohiti Supatipano bhagavato savakasango Ujupatipano bhagavato savakasango Nyaya patipano bhagavato savakasango Samichi patipano bhagavato savakasango Yadidang chatari purisa yukani Atta purisa pugala Sangho Ahuneyo Bahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaneyo Anuttarang Punyaketang Lokasati. Okay, we will pay respect to Triple Gem. Betang Pujemi. Damang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi. Okay. You can be seated. Yeah? Then just relax yourself. Maintain some more attention. Then we will continue with our Sutta class. We are actually sharing this book, The Buddha and His Teaching, by Venerable Narada. We are... Oh, what is the latest page? Yeah? The new chapter. Chapter 15. Yeah. Chapter 15, I think page 290 on. Oh, 270 only. Okay. Yeah. Oh yes, page 270. Yeah. This topic we will let Sister Alicia lead the discussion, and from there, we will have our Dhamma sharing. Yeah. Come, Alicia.
Hello. Good evening, Brother Tu, Mrs. Tu, and all Kayalamitas. Chapter 15 是没有人 nominate, 所以我想把握这个机会学习。所以我想学 the Dharma. Actually, first of all, when I see the Dharma, oh, the Dharma is the Buddha's teaching. Then I go, and then as I read,I said, oh my God, there's so many things. And then some of the words that, you know, I don't really know how to pronounce. But anyway, as I read about the Dharma, first they have six meaning in the Dharma, just this one Dharma words. The first I encounter is the teaching of the Buddha, so-called Dharma,And then the good conduct and the good behavior, this is like holding on to the practice of the sila, samadhi, and panya. And then the truth that realized by practice or cultivation, you know. So the fourth one is the nature or the quality of that something processes. And the fifth one is the underlying the all the objectives of the nature law of order of things which the Buddha discerned. And the sixth meaning of the basic mental of the basic mental or physical state of a thing, a plurality of which at least in the text of the Abhidhamma, explicitly to be conceived as some senses contributing, constituting the reality of will or experience. So, first, the teaching of the Buddha. Okay, what is Buddhism? This doctrine is profound, hard to see, difficult to understand.Come sublime, not within the sphere of logic, subtle to be understood by the wise. The first is Tipitaka. The Buddha has passed away, but the sublime teaching which he expounded during his long and successful ministry and which he unreservedly bequeathed to humanity still exists in its pristine purity. Although the Master has left no written records of his teaching, his disciples preserved them by committing to memory and transmitting them orally from generation to generation. 3 months after the death of the Buddha, in the 8th year of King Ajatasattu, when 500 preeminent Arahants concerned with the preserving of the purity of the doctrine held a convocation at Rajagaha to rehearse it. The Venerable Ananda Thera, the Buddha beloved attendant who had the special privilege and honor of hearing the discourse from the Buddha himself, and the Venerable Upali Thera were chosen to answer questions about the Dharma, the doctrine, and the Vinaya discipline respectively. This first council compiled and arranged in its presence from the Pali Tipitaka, which represent the entire body of the Buddha's teaching. 2 other councils of Arahant were held 100 and 236 years later respectively, again to rehearse the word of the Buddha's because attempts were being made to pollute the pure teaching. About 83 BC, during the reign of the pious Simhala King Watagamani Abaya, a council of Arahants was held, and the Tipitaka was, for the first time in the history of Buddhism, committed to writing in Alu Vihara in Ceylon. Alu Vihara is a hamlet in the interior of Ceylon, about 24 miles from Kandy. This sacred rock temple is still a place of pilgrimage to the Buddhists of Ceylon. Buddha Hosobati, a biography of the great commentator Buddha Gosa, states that the amount of book written on ola leaves when piled up would exceed the height of 6 elephants. Thanks to the indefatigable effort to those noble and foresight Arahants, there is no room either now or in the future for higher critics or progress scholars to adulterate the pure teaching. The voluminous Tipitaka, which contains the essence of the Buddha's teaching, is estimated to be about 11 times of the size of the Bible. The word Tipitaka means tree basket. They are the basket of discipline, Vinaya Pitaka, the basket of discourse, the Sutta Pitaka, and the basket of ultimate doctrine, the Abhidhamma Pitaka. Vinaya Pitaka. The Vinaya Pitaka, which is regarded as the sheet anchor of the holy order, deals mainly with the rules and regulations of the order of bhikkhus, monks, and the bhikkhunis, the nuns. For nearly 20 years after the enlightenment of the Buddha, no definite rules were laid down for control and discipline of the Sangha order. Subsequently, as occasion arose, the Buddha promulgated rules for the future discipline of the Sangha. Reason for the promulgation of a rules, their various implications, and specific Vinaya ceremony of the Sangha are fully described in the Vinaya Pitaka. The history of the gradual development of the Sasana from its very inception, a brief account of the life and ministry of the Buddha, and details of the 3 councils are some other additional relevant contents of the Vinaya Pitaka. Indirectly, it reveals useful information about ancient history, Indian custom, ancient arts and science. One who reads the Vinaya Pitaka cannot but be impressed by the democratic constitution of the Sangha, their holding of procession in common, the exceptional high moral standard of the bhikkhus, and the unsurpassed administrative abilities of the Buddha, who anticipate even the present parliamentary system. Lord Zidan writes, and it may come as a surprise to many to learn that in the assemblies of the Buddhists in India, 2,000 years and more ago, are to be found the rudiment of our own parliamentary practice of the present days. The Vinaya Pitaka consists of the following five books: Parayajika Pali, Pasitiya Pali, Mahavaga Pali, Kulavaga Pali, and Parivara Pali. So basically, they are the major. The Vibhanga is the major offense, the minor offense, greater affection, and the Khandaka is lesser second and epitome of the Vinaya. The Sutta Pitaka. The Sutta Pitaka consists briefly of the instructive discourse delivered by the Buddha to both the Sangha and the laity on various occasions. A few discourses expounded by disciples such as the Venerable Sariputta, Mangalana, and Ananda are incorporated and are accorded as much veneration as the word of the Buddha himself. Since they were approved by him, most of the sermons were intended mainly for the benefit of the bhikkhus, and they deal with the holy life and with the exposition of the doctrine. There are several other discourses which deal with both the material and the moral progress of his lay followers. The Singhalovada Sutta, for instance, deals mainly with the duties of a layman. There are also a few interesting talks given to children. This Pitaka may be compared to a book of prescriptions, since the discourse will expound on a diverse occasion to suit the temperaments of various persons. They may be seemingly contradictory statements, but they should not be misconstrued as they were uttered by the Buddha to suit a particular purpose. For instance, to the same question, he would maintain silence. When the inquirer was merely foolishly inquisitive, or give a detailed reply when he knew the inquirer to be an earnest seeker after the truth. The Sutta Pitaka consists of the following five Nikayas collections: Dika Nikaya, collection of long discourse; Majjhima Nikaya, collection of the middle length discourse; and Samyutta Nikaya, collection of the kindred saying; and Guttara Nikaya, collection of the gradual saying. Khandaka Nikaya is a smaller collection. The first Dika Nikaya this includes the great discourse of the foundation of the mindfulness. The fruits of the contemplate life, and the Buddha last days. There are 34 long sutta in this Dika Nikaya. And the second Majjhima Nikaya, this includes shorter exposition of karma, mindfulness of breathing, and mindfulness of the body. There are 152 medium length sutta in this Nikaya. The third one, Samyutta Nikaya, they are according to one reckoning 2,089, but other commentaries say that 7,762 shorter sutta in this Nikaya. And the fourth one is they have a smaller group of sutta which consists of 9,565, which they compile it from 1 to 10. And the fifth one, Khandaka Nikaya, This fifth is subdivided into 15 books, which is Kudaka Patta, shorter text, Dhammapada, the way of truth, Udana, hands of joy, Iti Utaka, thus said discourse, Sutta Nipata, collection discourses, Vimana Vatu, stories of salvation mentioned, Petta Vatu, stories of Petta, Theragatha, sums of the brethren, Theragatha, sums of the sisters, Jakarta, birth story of the Bodhisattva, Nidesa is exposition, Pati Sambhida, books of analytic knowledge, Apadana, lives of Arahants, Buddha Vamsa, history of the Buddha, Chariya Pitaka, modes of conduct, Abhidhamma Pitaka. Abhidhamma Pitaka is the most important and most interesting of the three containing, and it does the profound philosophy of the Buddha's teaching in contrast to the simpler discourse in the Sutta Pitaka. Abhidhamma, the higher doctrine of the Buddha, expounds the quintessences of his profound teaching. According to some scholar, Abhidhamma is not a teaching of the Buddha, but it is later elaboration of scholastic monk. Tradition, however, attributes the nucleus of the Abhidhamma to the Buddha himself. The matika or metrics of the Abhidhamma, such as kusala dhamma, wholesome state, akusala dhamma, unwholesome state, and abhyakata dhamma, indeterminate state, etc., which have been elaborated in the six books. Katavattu, being excluded, were expounded by the Buddha. To the Venerable Sariputta is assigned to honor and having explained all these topics in detail. Whosoever the great author of authors may have been, it has to be admitted that the Abhidhamma must be the product of an intellectual genius comparable only to the Buddha. This is evident from the intricate and subtle patana pakarana, which describe in details the various causal relation. To the wise truth seeker, Abhidhamma is an indispensable guide and an intellectual treat. Here is found food for thought to original thinker and to earnest student who wish to develop wisdom and lead an ideal Buddhist life. Abhidhamma is not a subject of fleeting interest designed for the superficial reader. Modern psychology, limited as it is, comes within the scope of Abhidhamma inasmuch as it deals with mind, thoughts, thought process and mental properties. But it does not admit of psyche or a soul. It teaches a psychology without a psyche. If one were to read the Abhidhamma as a modern textbook of psychology, one would be disappointed. No attempt has here been made to solve all the problems that confront a modern psychologist. Consciousness, citta, is defined. Thoughts are analyzed and classified chiefly from an ethical standpoint. All mental properties, Chittasikar, are enumerate. The composition of each type of consciousness is set forth in details. How thought arises in minutes described. Minutely described. Bhavanga and Javana, thought moments which are explained only in the Abhidhamma, and which have no parallel in modern psychology, are of special interest to research students in psychology. Irrelevant problems that interest students and scholars, but have no relation to one's deliverance, are deliberately set aside. Matter is similarly discussed, but it has not been described for physicists. Fundamental units of matter, material properties, source of matter, relationship and mind of mind and matters are explained. Abhidhamma does not attempt to give a systematized knowledge of mind and matters. It investigates those two composite factors of the so-called being to help the understanding of things as they truly are. A philosophy has been developed on those lines. Based on that philosophy, an ethical system has been evolved to realize the ultimate goal, Nibbana. As Mrs. Ryers David rightly says, Abhidhamma deals with what we find within us, around us, and what we aspire to find. While the Sutta Pitaka contains the conventional teaching, Vihara Dhisana, the Abhidhamma Pitaka contains the ultimate teaching, Paramattha Dhisana. In generally admit by most exponents of the Dharma, that the knowledge of the Abhidhamma is essential to comprehend fully the teaching of the Buddha, as it presents the key that opens to the door of reality. The Abhidhamma Pitaka is composed of the following seven works: Dharma Sanghani, classification of the Dharma, Vibhanga division, Tathagata, the discourse of elements, Pungala Panati, the book on individuals, Katawatu, points of controversy, Yamaka, the book of pairs, Patana, the book of causal relation. The Abhidhamma is really a long a long thing to I have read a little bit, but it's seriously the seven thing is, because it's a 5 pages of thing, so I think I wouldn't go through that.
Yeah, no need, not important.
Is Buddhism a philosophy? The sublime Dharma enshrined in this secure text deals with truth, that fact that can be tested and verified by personal experience, and is not concerned with theories and speculation, which may be accepted as profound truth today and thrown overboard tomorrow. The Buddha did not expound revolutionary philosophical theories, nor did he attempt to create a new material science. In plain terms, he explained both what is within and what is without. So far as it concerned emancipation from the ills of life and revealed the unique path of deliverance. Furthermore, the Buddha did not teach all that he knew. On one occasion, while the Buddha was staying in a forest, he took a handful of leaves and said, "O bhikkhus, what I have taught you is just comparable to the leaves in my hand, and what I have not taught you to the leaves in the forest." He taught what he deemed was absolutely essential for one's purification, and was characteristically silent on questions irrelevant to his noble mission. Incidentally, he forestalled many a modern scientist and philosopher. Heraclitus, 500 BC, believed that everything flows pantheria, and that the universe is a constant becoming. He thought that nothing ever is, everything is becoming. It was he who made the famous statement that a person cannot step into the same stream twice. Pythagoras, 532 BC, taught, among other things, the theory of transmigration of soul. Descartes declared the necessity of examining all phenomena at the bar of reasonable doubt. Spinoza, while admitting the existence of a permanent reality, asserted that all existence is transitory. In his opinion, sorrow was to be conquered by finding an object of knowledge, which is not transient, not ephemeral, but immutable, permanent, everlasting. Berkeley taught that the so-called atom was a metaphysical fiction. Hume analyzed the mind and concluded that consciousness consists of fleeting mental state. In the view of Hegel, the entire phenomenon is a becoming. Schopenhauer, in his work as Will and Idea, has presented the truth of suffering and its cause in Western Europe. Ori Bergson advocated the doctrine of changes and emphasized the value of intuition. William James referred to a stream of consciousness and denied the existence of a soul. The Buddha expounded this truth of transience, anicca, sorrow, dukkha, and soullessness, anatta, more than 2,500 years ago. The moral and philosophical teaching of the Buddha are to be studied, to be practiced, and above all, to be realized by one's own intuitive wisdom. As such, the Dharma is compared to a raft which enables one to cross the ocean of life. Buddhism, therefore, cannot strictly be called a philosophy because it is not merely the love of inducing the search after wisdom, nor is Buddhism a hypothetical interpretation of an unknown, as in metaphysics, or of the inexactly known as the ethics of political philosophy. If by philosophy is meant an inquiry not so much after certain particular facts as after the fundamental character of this world in which we find ourselves, and of the kind of life which such a world it behoves us to live. Buddhism may approximate to a philosophy, but it's very much more comprehensive. Philosophy deals mainly with knowledge and is not concerned with practice, whereas Buddhism lays special emphasis on practice and realization. Is Buddhism a religion? Professor Ryers David writes, "What is meant by religion? The word as is known is not found in language nor related to our own, and its derivation is uncertain. Cicero in one passage derived it from re and lego, and held thus its real meaning was the repetition of prayers and incantation. Another interpretation derived from the word of the re and logo and makes its original sense that of attachment, of an continual binding that is no doubt of the gods. A third derivation connects the word with lext and explains it is a law binding, scrupulously conscientious frame of mind." Actually, very true. Because Cicero, actually, Cicero is a Roman politician, and a lawyer. And then all these words actually were. 我不认识
actually,
我知道他的 meaning 因为我查字典 Everywhere I have to go and look into the dictionary. I'm so sorry.
This topic is very tough. Not easy. New to Buddhism.
Buddhism is not strictly a religion in the sense in which the word is commonly understood, for it is not a system of faith and worship owing any allegiance to a supernatural god. Buddhism does not demand blind faith from its adherent. Hence, mere belief is dethroned and for its substitute. Confidence based on no knowledge. It is possible for a Buddhist to entertain occasional doubt until he attained the first stage of sainthood, Sotapan. When all doubts about the Buddha, Dharma and the Sangha are completely resolved, one becomes a genuine follower of the Buddha only after attaining this stage. The confidence of a follower of the Buddha is like that of a patient in respect of a noted physician or of a student regarding his teacher. Although a Buddhist seeks refuge in the Buddha as his comparable guide and teacher who indicates the path of purity, he makes no servile surrender. A Buddhist does not think that he can gain purity merely by seeking refuge in the Buddha or by mere faith in him. It is not within the power even of a Buddha to wash away the impurity of others. Strictly speaking, one can either purify nor defile another. The Buddha as a teacher may be instrumental, but we ourselves are responsible of our purification. In the Dhammapada, the Buddha says, by oneself alone is evil done. By oneself is one defiled. By oneself alone is evil avoided. By oneself alone is one purified. Purity and impurity depends on oneself. No one can purify another. A Buddhist is not a slave to a book or to any individual, nor does he sacrifice his freedom of thought by becoming a follower of the Buddha. He is at full liberty to exercise his own free will and develop his knowledge even to the extent of attaining Buddhahood himself. For all are potential Buddhas. Naturally, Buddhists quote the Buddha as their authority, but the Buddha himself discarded all authorities. Immediate realization is the sole criterion of truth in Buddhism. Its keynote is rational understanding, samadhi. The Buddha advised seeker of the truth not to accept anything merely on the authority of another, but exercise their own reasoning and judge for themselves whether a thing is right or wrong. On one occasion, the citizens of Kasaputa, known as Kalamas, approached the Buddha and said that many ascetics and Brahmins who came to preach to them used to exalt their own doctrines and denounce those of others, and that they were at a loss to understand which of those worries were right. The Buddha said, yes, O Kalamas, it is right for you to doubt. It is right for you to waver. In a doubtful matter, wavering has arisen. Remark the Buddha and give them the following advice, which applies with equal force to modern rationalists as it did to those sceptic Brahmins of yore. Come, O Kalamas, do not accept anything on mere hearsay, thinking that thus have we heard it from a long time. Do not accept anything by mere tradition. Do not accept anything on account of rumors. And do not accept anything just because it's accord with your scriptures. Do not accept anything by mere supposition. Do not accept anything by mere inference. Do not accept anything by merely considering the appearances. Do not accept anything merely because it agrees with your preconceived notion. Do not accept anything merely because it seems acceptable. Do not accept anything that the ascetic is respected by us. But when you know yourself for yourself, these things are immoral, these things are blameworthy, these things are censured by the wise, these things, when performed and undertaken, conduce to ruin and sorrow, then indeed to you reject them. When you know for yourself these things are moral, these things are blameless, these things are praised by the wise, these things, when performed and undertaken, conduce to well-being and happiness, then do you live and act accordingly. This wise saying of the Buddha, after some 2,000-5,000 years ago, still retain their original force and freshness even in this enlightened 20th century. With a homely illustration, Janasara Samuchaya repeat the same counsel in different words. As the wise tested gold by burning, cutting and rubbing it on a piece of touchstone, so are you to accept my words after examining them, not merely out of regard for me. The Buddha exhorted his disciple to seek truth and not to heed merely persuasion even by superior authority. Now, though it may be admitted that there is no blind faith in Buddhism, one might question whether there is no worshipping Buddha of Buddha image and such like idolatry amongst Buddhists. Buddhists do not worship an image expecting worldly or spiritual favor, but pay their homage to what it represents. A Buddhist goes before an image and offers flowers and incense not to the image but the Buddha. He does so as a mark of gratitude, reflecting on the virtues of the Buddha and pondering on the transiency of the flowers. An understanding Buddhist designated makes himself feel that he is in the noble presence of the Buddha, and thereby gains inspiration to emulate him. Referring to image, the great philosopher Kong Kaisling writes, "I know nothing more grand in this world than the figure of the Buddha. It is the perfect embodiment of spirituality in the visible domain." Then again, Buddhists do not worship the Bodhi tree, but consider it a symbol of enlightenment and so worthy of reverence. Though such external form of homage are prevalent amongst Buddhists, the Buddha is not worshipped as a god. These external objects of homage are not absolute necessarily, but they are useful and they help one to concentrate one's attention. An intellectual would dispense with them as he could easily focus his attention on the Buddha and thus visualize him. For our own good and out of gratitude, we pay such homage. But what the Buddha expects from his disciple is not obeisance of the actual observance of his teaching. Just before the Buddha passed away, many disciples came to pay their respect to him. One bhikkhu, however, remained in his cell absorbed in meditation. This matter was reported to the Buddha, who summoned him and, on inquiring the reason of his absence, was told, "Lord, I knew that your reverence would pass away 3 months hence. I thought the best way of honoring the teacher was by attaining arahantship even before the disease of your reverence." The Buddha extolled the praiseworthy conduct of a loyal and dutiful bhikkhu, saying, "Excellent, excellent. He who loves me should emulate this bhikkhu. He honors me best who practices my teaching best." On another occasion, the Buddha remarked, "He who sees the Dharma sees me." Bradio, 以前我每次听 Bradio 讲 Buddha say when he who sees Sadama sees me.
Yeah, correct.
Then I come to contemplate on this.
Yeah, very important. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. 以法为师，对吗？
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 以法为师。Not only that, you see, the Buddha is the embodiment of his perfection, virtue, and wisdom. And this perfection, virtue, and wisdom come from cultivating the Dhamma. You understand? That's why if you can penetrate the Dhamma, he who sees the Dhamma definitely sees him. Where he is the embodiment of the fruition of the cultivation of this Dhamma. So if you don't cultivate to realize those Dhamma, you cannot really see the Buddha. Because the Buddha is not the figure. The one that arise 2,600 years ago, that from my mind. That, during that time, is his segmented life. That's why they call him the Sammasambuddha. That segmented life from my mind. But that one is not the Buddha like we have understood. Well, that one is anatta, karmically conditioned for my mind, and nothing to do with the Buddha, but it's a functional body that allow the Buddha to come to this world to perform the function of a Sammasambuddha, to share the Dhamma, to do whatever his mission entails the Buddha nature to do. So this understanding is very important. That's why when they say you pay respect or you idol worshipper, means you worship the image. No. The image is never the Buddha. That's why when people destroy the image or say bad thing about the image, don't be foolish enough to be affected by it. Because that is not the Buddha. That is just an image for you to recall to mind the nine great qualities of the Buddha. And the Buddha is the embodiment of his perfection, wisdom, and cultivation. And that one, nobody can take away from him. Understand? It's recorded in his spiritual nature. That's why that is very unique. Then what Alicia shared also very true. You take the Dhamma to be your teacher. Yi Fa Wei Si, which is also very important, because the embodiment of the Buddha's teaching, which is the truth, can make you enlightened, can liberate your mind, can give you the fruition of that Dhamma cultivation, which can bring about transformation, great transformation in that form of mind's character, personality, understanding. That's why it can liberate that form of mind. Then that wisdom that is connected to the form of mind can make the form of mind completely free from suffering. That's what enlightenment is all about. But that form of mind is never you. Always remember that. Okay, good. Continue. Yeah.
Furthermore, it must be mentioned that there are no petitionary or intercessory prayers in Buddhism. However, much one may pray to the Buddha, one cannot be saved. The Buddha does not and cannot grant worldly favors to those who pray to him. A Buddhist should not pray to the saved to be saved, but should rely on himself and strive with diligence to win his freedom and gain purity, advising his disciple not to depend on others, but to depend on oneself and to be self-reliant. The Buddha says, striving should be done by yourself. The Tathagatas are the teachers. The Buddha not only speaks of the futility of prayers, but also disparage a slave mentality. Instead of prayers, the Buddha emphasized the importance of meditation that promotes self-discipline, self-control, self-purification, and self-enlightenment. It serves as a tonic both to the mind and heart. Meditation is the essence of the Buddha. In Buddhism, there is not as most other religion, and Almighty God to be obeyed and feared. Buddhism denies the existence of supernatural power, conceived as an almighty being or a causeless force. There are no divine revelation nor divine messenger or prophets. A Buddhist is therefore not subservient to any higher supernatural power which controls his destiny and which arbitrarily rewards and punishes. Since Buddhists do not believe in relation of a divine being, Buddhism does not claim the monopoly of truth and does not condemn any other religion. Intolerance is the greatest enemy of religion. With his characteristic tolerance, the Buddha advised his disciple not to get angry, discontented, or displeased even when others spoke ill of him, or of his teaching or his order. If you do so, the Buddha say, you will not only bring yourself into danger of spiritual loss, but you will not be able to judge whether what they say is correct or not correct. A most enlightened sentiment denouncing unfair criticism of other faith, the Buddha state, it is a man who looks up and spits at heaven. The spirit does not soil the heaven, but it comes back and defiles his own person. What a great wisdom of radio. Buddhism expounds no dogma that one must blindly believe, nor creeds that one must accept on good faith without reasoning. No superstitious rites and ceremonies to be observed for formal entry into the fold. No meaningless sacrifice and penances for one's purification. Punishment means punishment. Buddhism cannot therefore be strictly called a religion, because it is neither a system of faith and worship, nor the outward act of a form by which men indicate their recognition of the existence of a God, or God having power over their own destiny, to whom obedience, service, and honor are due. Karl Marx said, religion is the soul of the soulless condition, the heart of the heartless world, the opium of the people. Buddhism is not such a religion. For all Buddhist nations grew up in the cradle of Buddhism, and their present cultural advancement is clearly due mainly to the many influence of the teaching of the Buddha. However, if by religion is meant a teaching which takes a view of life that is more than superficial, a teaching which looks into the life and not merely at it, a teaching which furnishes man with a guide to conduct that is in accord with this inlook, a teaching which enable those who give it heed to face life with fortitude and death with serenity, or a system of deliverance from the ills of life, then certainly Buddhism is a religion of religions. Is Buddhism an ethical system? Buddhism contains an excellent moral code, including one for the monk and another for the laities. But it is much more than an ordinary moral teaching. Morality, sila, is only the preliminary stage, and it is a means to an end, but not an end in itself. Though absolutely essential, it alone does not lead to one deliverance or perfect purity. It is only the first stage of the path of purity. Beyond morality is wisdom, panya. The base of Buddhism is morality, and wisdom is its apex. As a pair of wings of a bird are these two complementary virtues. Wisdom is like unto a man's eye, morality is like unto his feet. One of the appellative of the Buddha is vichacharana sampanna, endowed with wisdom and conduct. Of the four noble truths that form the foundation of Buddhism, the first three represent the philosophy of the Buddha's teaching. The fourth, the ethics of Buddhism based on that philosophy. The fourth is the Noble Eightfold Path, right, Brother? Morality in Buddhism is not found on any doubtful divine revelation, nor it is the ingenious invention of an exceptional mind. But it is a rational and practical code based on verifiable fact and individual experience. In the opinion of Professor Max Müller, the Buddhism moral code is one of the most perfect which the world has ever known. Professor Rias Davis says, Buddhisms are no Buddhist or non-Buddhist, I have examined every one of the great religious system of the world, and in none of those have I found anything to surpass it in beauty and comprehensive the noble Eightfold Path of the Buddha. I am contented to shape my life according to that path. So that's every one of us. It is interesting to note that according to Buddhism, there are deeds which are ethically good and bad, deeds which are neither good nor bad, and deeds which tend to be ceasing of all deeds. Good deeds are essential for one's emancipation, but when once the ultimate goal of the holy life is attained, one transcends both good and evil. The Buddha says, righteous things, Dharma, you have to give up. How much more the unrighteous thing, the Adharma. The deeds which is associated with attachment, Loha, ill will, Dosa, and delusion, Moha, is evil. That this which is associates with non-attachment, a loba, goodwill, a dosa, and wisdom panya is good. The deeds of an arahant, a stainless one, possess no ethical value of as he has gone beyond both good and evil. This does not mean that he is passive. He is active, but his activity is selfless and is direct to help others to tread the path he has trodden himself. His deeds, ordinarily accepted as good, lack creative power as regards himself. Unlike the action of a whirling, his action do not react on himself as a karmic effect. His action in Pali are called kriya, functional, purest goal cannot further be purified. The mental state of the four types of supramundane path consciousness, namely Sotapanni, Streamwinner, Sakadagami, once returned. Sakadagami, once returner, Anagami, non-returner, and Arahant, worthy, though wholesome kusala, do not tend to accumulate fresh karma, but on the contrary, tend to be gradual cessation of the individual flux of becoming, and therewith to the gradual cessation of good and evil deeds. In this type of supramundane consciousness, the wisdom factor panya, which tends to destroy the root of karma, is predominant, while in the mundane types of consciousness, volition chitena, which produce karmic activities is predominant. What is the criterion of moral according to Buddhism? The answer is found in the admonition given by the Buddha to young Samanera Rahula. If there is a deed, Rahula, you wish to do, reflect us. In this deed conducive to any harm, to my harm, or to others' harm, or to that of both, then if this is a bad deed entailing suffering, from such a deed you must resist. If there is a deed you wish to do, reflect us. If these deeds do not conducive to my harm, nor to others' harm, nor to that of both, then, is this a good deed entailing happiness? Such a deed you must do again and again. In assessing morality, a Buddhist takes into consideration the interests both of himself and others, animal not excluded. In the Karaniya Metta Sutta, the Buddha exhorts, as the mother protects her only child even at the risk of her own life, even so let one cultivate boundless thought of loving kindness towards all beings. The Dhammapada states, all fear punishment to all life is dear, comparing others with oneself. Let one neither hurt nor kill. To understand the exceptional high standard of morality of the Buddha, expect from his ideal followers, one must carefully read the Dhammapada, Sigolawada Sutta, Yagapaja Sutta, Mangala Sutta, Metta Sutta, Parabhava Sutta, Vasala Sutta, Dhammika Sutta, and etc. As a moral teaching, it excels all other ethical systems. But morality is only the beginning and not the end of Buddhism. If one sense Buddhism is not a philosophy, in other sense it is the philosophy of a philosophist. In one sense Buddhism is not a religion, in another sense it is the religion of religions. What is Buddhism? What Buddhism is? Buddhism is neither a metaphysical path nor a ritualistic path. It is neither skeptical nor dogmatic. It is neither eternalism or nihilism. It is neither self-modification or self-indulgence. It is neither pessimism nor optimism but realism. It is neither absolutely this worldly nor other worldly. It is not extrovert but introvert. It is not theocentric but homocentric. It is a unique path of enlightenment. The original Pali term of Buddhism is Dharma, which literally means that which upholds or sustains him who acts in conformity with its principle and thus prevent him from falling into woeful states. There is no proper English equivalent that exactly conveys the meaning of the Pali term. The Dharma is that which really is. It is the doctrine of reality. It is a mean of deliverance from suffering and deliverance itself. Whether the Buddha arrives or not, the Dharma exists. All eternity, it is the Buddha. Do I jump? Correct. Or eternity. It is a Buddha that realized this Dharma, which ever lies hidden from the ignorant eyes of men, till he, an enlightened one, comes and compassionately reveals it to the world. Whether the Tathagatas appear or not, O bhikkhus, it remains a fact. an established principle, a natural law that all conditioned things are transient, anicca, sorrowful, dukkha, and that everything is soulless, anatta. This fact the Tathagata realized, understand, and when he has realized and understood it, announced, teach, proclaim, establish, disclose, analyze, and makes it clear that all conditioned things are transient, sorrowful, and that everything is soulless. In the Majjhima Nikaya, the Buddha says, one thing only does the Buddha teach, namely suffering and the cessation of suffering. This is the doctrine of reality. Uttana states, just as O bhikkhus, the mighty ocean is of one flavor, the flavor of salt. Even so, O bhikkhus, this Dhamma is of the one flavor, the flavor of deliverance, vimutti. This is the means of deliverance. This sublime Dhamma is not something apart from oneself. It is purely depends on oneself and is to be realized by oneself. As such, the Buddha exhorts, abide with oneself as an island, with oneself as a refuge. Abide with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as a refuge. Seek not for external refuge. Brother Teo, 我可以讲华语。
Yeah. 可以用华语 ，better. Yes, your English is not so good.
我读到我的舌头要打架。
对呀。
Sorry.
可以啊，用华语。
Actually, 我想 share 的是达玛。其实这个 topic 是非常的难，只是我想出我自己的 experience，这五年来在 Brother Duo 这里的学习，跟大家分享一下罢了。还有我的 friend Lisa， 因为她是，谢谢她来捧场。Actually，
Very good， 好的，
达玛啊，他对我来讲，我起初来学习的就是达玛佛法 ，OK。佛法，那你来学佛法的主要目的是什么？就是学佛，学佛做什么？现在我知道，我读了这个 chapter 之后呢，就是我们要学习佛陀的慈悲，他的品德，还有他的所有太 perfect 了，所以在这里我这几年就是今年开始，我觉得我要多加油一点去学习，很多东西我都不懂。Bradio 每天我们都说的一句就是What is the purpose of meditation？ So 我就在想，今天我就在想，meditation 就是 training of the mind。然后就是 put it into daily， 就是我们所谓的在 daily 里面 cultivate 我们的所有的 the noble eightfold path 里面的 the right view， 还有就是在我们的 daily 里面看到我们的习气。今天我其实要做这个 preparation， 然后我家里说没面包了，要做面包，然后我就 OK 好，我就做面包。然后再来的时候 Freddy 就问我，你干嘛做面包，你就去买一个面包就算了。然后我就告诉他，其实我是特地要做这个面包， at the same time 我要看一下我的 mind 怎样去 handle 这个 between 我的功课和我的家里的所谓的 duty， 所以我在这里我学习到的就是，你可以在你当下，你就是你应该做你的功课的时候，你就做你的功课；你在做面包的时候，你就做面包，就是关你的心。这个就是我要学习的所谓的 training of the mind。 Brad, you 有什么要补充吗？
Yeah, which is very good. For those who don't know Mandarin, she has been studying the Dhamma for quite a while. So last time she didn't know what Buddhism was. Then she thought we come into Buddhism is to study the teaching. But then she realized there's so much more thing to that. We need to even know who the Buddha is. We need to understand his beautiful virtue, wisdom, understanding, perfection, and cultivation. Then from there, we need to understand his beautiful teaching. Then we have to put it into practice and cultivate this teaching. Otherwise, it's just theory. Then to practice, you see, I always remind her that we need to every time inquire, what are we doing in the name of meditation? Yeah, I realize a lot of Buddhists, or so-called Buddhists or cultivator, they always go for retreat meditation, thinking that that is very important, which is true, very important. But they didn't realize that the real meditation is life itself, in the midst of life, daily life. So it's not just retreat. So when you go to retreat, you do all those sitting, walking, noting, and so-called meditation methods and techniques, thinking that that is meditation. But you are not focused. You are not clear about what you are doing. So that's why she reflected on this very important reminder that I constantly explain to you all while at the retreat and even the Tuesday class, Thursday class, and Sunday class. So this word the Buddha mentioned before he passed away, strive on heedfulness, is very important. That's why she came to know the purpose is to train this mind so that this mind is heedful. And to be heedful, there are two parts. That's why first part is to train it to be mindful. Either you train your spiritual faculty, then the spiritual faculty will do away the mental hindrance, then the mindfulness will automatically be there. Otherwise, you need to use some skillful means to train the heedless mind until it becomes heedful, means mindful. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then after that, use it in daily life, which she came to understand, which is very important, to cultivate the meditation as taught by the Buddha, which is the fourth noble truth, which is also noble eightfold path. That's why he said we need to contemplate, reflect, and develop the understanding of the eight noble eightfold path factor, starting with right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, then right livelihood, followed by the four right effort, then constantly develop samadhi, sati and samadhi, means mindfulness and stability of mindfulness leading to samadhi. Then today he is supposed to come prepared for the tonight's sharing. Then he said, at home they need to do their worldly duty. So the worldly duty is to make bun, I think. Bun, sama, mian pao, or bread. Okay, sorry. Mian pao is bread. I thought it's bun. So, got to make bread. So she decided to go ahead with the bread. But she knew the Dhamma cultivation is both daily life, and when you cultivate, you can cultivate in whatever posture, anywhere, any place, anytime. So her question is, she said she came to understand, when you do your duty, you just do. When you cultivate the Dhamma, you just cultivate. But these two actually can be paired together. While you do your worldly duty, you are also cultivating. As long as you are mindful, heedful, and aware, you can cultivate, even in the midst of doing your work, your household work, or in the office, going through your career, or while in a meeting, having to conduct meeting, or seminar, workshop, or even as a participant while listening. All this, you can cultivate the Buddha Dhamma. You only need to be heedful, mindful. That's it. When you are mindful and heedful, the Dhamma will arise. you will understand. And that is what meditation is all about, daily mindfulness. When you are mindful of the four foundations, the first foundation is kaya, your physical body, your bodily posture, activity, the physical phenomena. This is to anchor your mind so that it is not heedless, so that it is aware, that is to establish sati. Then when you are very, very stable, it stabilizes. Then you become ever mindful. When you are ever mindful, the second foundation, third foundation, and the fourth foundation of mindfulness become very easy. When this mindfulness stabilizes, throughout the day, you will experience feeling. That's how Vedana Nupassana, the second foundation, come to be. Where feeling is a common, they call it cetasika, within every consciousness that arises, the seven universal. One of them is feeling. And feeling is always there before it moves. When it moves, it is conditioned into craving, positive or negative. So feeling, dependent on feeling, craving can arise when you don't have the wisdom, when you don't have the ability to develop the right view, the understanding, to let things be. Then when you get yourself entangled, you react and stir your mind. That's how the duality arises. That's how craving arises, like and dislike, pleasant and unpleasant. So all this is part and parcel of cultivation. So when you are able to feel, then when this cetasika or this mental concomitant, when they arise and move inside, even the craving and all those things, these are called the content of consciousness. Your anger, your emotion, your fear, your like and dislike, your pleasant and unpleasant feeling. All of the mind states that you experience, even when you go through meditation, when you are ever mindful, silent, still, you experience the calmness, the tranquility, the stillness, the peacefulness. All these are sankhara, mind states. That's why you can develop mindfulness of citta. Citta is content of consciousness. You can be aware. Then when your consciousness has greed, you understand. When the consciousness is without greed, you understand. That's how your mindfulness develops. Then when you have done the first three foundations, you are ready for the fourth foundation, which is mindfulness of Dhamma. That one, you can go through very fast if you have done your first three correctly, the initial wisdom come. Then when you are mindful of Dhamma, the first category of Dhamma is your five mental hindrances. You have to be aware. Then you have to deal with them. The five ways to overcome unwholesome thought, wrong thought and all things, mental hindrances. Then move on to the next category of Dhamma, which is the five aggregate of form and mind. You will be mindful of this five aggregate throughout the day, because the physical form and the external form, you will always perceive them. You will always be aware of them. Then, apart from form, feeling, the other aggregate. Then, perception. Every moment of sense door experience, the perception is there. It's also one of the seven universal. Then sankhara, mental activity, mental states, mental concomitant, they are all there. Then the last one is consciousness. That's why you have to develop the mindfulness of them. Then how, upon contact, consciousness come to be. Then when the two yoke together, two wrong view, how the fetters come to be. How the greed, hatred and delusion comes to be. The how you get entangled. Then through all this, you will move on to the third category of practice. Mindfulness of the six internal sense bases and six external sense bases. Then you can trace the origination factor. Then retrospectively reverse it through wisdom. That is the fourth way. The third way is at the citta level. You just silent, aware, it ceases to be. Then after you have traced the origination factor, retrospectively reverse it, then you will be able to handle defilement. So which means you will have less and less defilement, less and less mental hindrance, and you will develop into more and more peaceful state of mind, tranquility, heedfulness. That's how the heedfulness become very stable, very clear, and you hardly have any mental hindrance. Then during that time, you realize your factors of enlightenment keep on arising. That's why the fourth category of mindfulness under the fourth foundation, Dhammanupassana, is mindfulness of the seven factors of enlightenment. When you can see them, you realize you are on the right path. You can never go wrong anymore. We have this factor of enlightenment waiting to enlighten the form of mind. And when the factor of enlightenment keep on arising, means you have cultivated the Noble Eightfold Path, the Four Noble Truths. All this understanding has starts to develop. That's how enlightenment, deliverance, vimutti can arise through wisdom. Okay? So you are on the right track, except you don't know how to combine the two. You are still at the level when I do my duty, worldly duty. When I cultivate. But the two can be combined. Because even when you do your worldly duty, you are still aware, mindful. So that is the part. Okay, let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Continue. 还有十分钟。
还有什么要写？其实感谢Brad，感谢大家这样陪审的听我读，还有就是还有就是在这之前，某人告诉我，你每次都上课，可是你没有上战场，就是没有 put into practice。 现在我终于明白，我们其实当我们train了我们的 mind 之后，就是要在 daily 里面实修，就是要真正的去看到我们的所谓的怎么讲，就是 cultivation， 就是虽然是怎么样讲，哎呀，我不懂得讲，不然就。 总之我很开心，就是我其实我整个人真的是，我不敢说我真的是有什么，我这几年在这里真的学到很多东西，从我是一个非常非常紧张，还有 full of negativity into depression， 到我现在我这个 mind state， 我觉得非常感恩。 感恩Brother就教我这么多年很细心的，you know，explain 给我们听，还有就是Kailamitas， 还有感恩我的本师释迦牟尼佛，还有所有的佛菩萨啦，就是
yeah.
all the Buddha and Bodhisattva 十方诸佛菩萨的。 的加持，我能够走到这里。 我觉得很感恩。萨度，谢谢阿弥陀佛。萨度，谢谢。Let
us rejoice. 萨度。 We thank Alicia for the very good sharing. Her English is not good, so you should pardon her when she read through that one. It's not easy because it's Abhidhamma and also mainly the Pali language in the teaching. Maybe next week. Next week, I will go through this one. But before I forget, you all better choose who is the next for the next topic. Who wants to be the next to share the next topic, the next chapter? Next week, you can rest. Because I will do the sharing for this chapter. I will go through with you all the big picture so that you all can understand. Because this topic is very, very wide. The teaching of the Buddha, the Dhamma, and there's a lot of misconception. Even this book, the author he write, he tried to defend the Buddha's teaching in many ways, which is, I think he has tried his best. He quoted from all the Western people and even the European side and other things, and even some from famous historical people during the early centuries and all things. But because he couldn't really explain in such a way about the beauty of the Buddha's teaching. And the Buddha's teaching is actually way beyond what he has spoken. what he has tried to say about the good things of the Dhamma is actually not doing, you call what? Not doing proper what? Justice to the Buddha Dhamma. Actually, the Buddha Dhamma is way beyond what he has tried to bring out all the good points. It is way beyond all those things that he tried to justify that Buddhism stand out in all this field, like philosophy. Is Buddhism a religion and all those things? Because to me, these are not relevant. Because Buddhism is unique because it is not something that you can describe and compare with what the worldly people do. What Buddhism has is it summarizes all of life. All of life, mundane and supramundane, into just this Dhamma truth. And this Dhamma is so beautiful, it can liberate the mind of living being. It can bring forth the understanding of life. And it's so profound, so beautiful, so all-encompassing. That's why it's way beyond all this. Then it not only talks about psychology in its sense, it goes into consciousness, deep into consciousness. What they are talking about to all this scientific field like psychology and all those things is all the thought process, which within the conditioned world is very useful, very important. But the other aspect that is beyond thought, the pure awareness, the pure nature, the true mind, all this they cannot understand. And the uniqueness of the Buddha's teaching is that true mind, that pure nature, that eternal nature, which he realized, he came to realize through his perfection. That was the message he wanted to give to the world. Without that, you cannot understand who are you, what are you. And his unique teaching of this universal characteristic of anicchang dukkang anatta is a universal characteristic. Huh? And he didn't mention the word universal characteristic. Means all phenomena within the conditioned world, whether it's physical, mental or nature's phenomena, they exhibit this characteristic. And you can see them, you can realize them, you can be aware of them. That's why your wisdom become different. You can awaken to all this. And these are the marvel of his teaching. That's why earlier on, I think, Polai came early. And she tried to share with me how the retreat, after the retreat, the transformation that happened and how it helped her in her career and all those things and the understanding. That's why she was full of joy. She texted me that he came early. Then he said, all this is so beautiful. It just unfolds so miraculously. We call it in Mandarin, Shen Qi. Shen Qi, what's the meaning? Ho San Ke Ya. Shen Qi. What is the English word, Yin Zhan? Miraculous. It's not miracle, no? Nothing to do with miracle. It's 很神奇. Like miraculous. Which means, it happened until you yourself also will be amazed that it's so powerful, so wonderful, so beautiful. Of course, the word miraculous, but it has nothing to do with miracle, you must understand. But it's the truth. Basing on your understanding of this teaching, the truth, her nature connect and everything become clear. No? That everything she do now, she can relate now, so clearly. So then she can communicate with the client now so easily. Maybe next week, if she's still around, we get her to share with you all. Yeah. 你还在吗? 不在了啊,等你回来了, 啊,把都把他了, 啊, after that, 不久, 回来就大选了, now might we let things be, when she come back, you must remind me, get her to share first, because she had her past, her whatever vows and all those things. So that's why all this, when the condition arise, it will connect. Because after it came first time, like I shared with you at the retreat, a lot of things happened to her, and the understanding keep on coming. Then she need that 3 years to prepare herself. That's why she was away, because she stays in JP. Then after the 3 years, suddenly she registered for the retreat. Inside tell her must go for the retreat. That's why after the retreat, she is completely different again. She reached another level. You go and listen to the sharing by her in the retreat. She never meditate one last time, seldom one. That type of meditation that I teach. In the retreat, straight away go into stillness so easily and sit without pain and full of clarity, understanding, and the nature that keep on. A lot of things happen. Then after that, the teaching becomes so clear. Is it the Heart Sutta book was like a jewel, so beautiful. Then the new book, Cultivating the Bodhisattva Way, that was what she was looking for. And after that retreat until now, she told me, she non-stop every day repeating the vow. Yeah. And every time she repeat, tears came out, and it was so strong. That's why I tell you, you understand the vow. The moment you take and move, it will take you along. You don't have to do anything. And this is what the Dhamma is all about, the wonderful. That's why Heart Sutta said, true emptiness is wonderful existence. Really, it's amazing. Then after that, so much thing happened. And not only to her, even to the depressed people, that 29 years old guy, the Eric was the same. You go and listen to all the recent sharing. These are people who are very new. And they seldom come. And the moment they come, they connect, they move very fast. So, 5 minutes past 10:30, I better stop. So that next week, we got more story. Next week, I will spend the whole full 1.5 hour to discuss this topic so that you all can prepare your question if you want to. Okay, so let us end. Let us recall to mind all the wholesomeness that we have all developed over the past 2 hour plus. Then we will share these merits with all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa jirang rakantu lokasasat etta watta cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyatayo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo sattang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and the worthy ones. Then we end, sadhu.